Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the world of the paranormal.
With Jason Ophir and Pat Rice, explore the world of UFOs, demons, ghosts, and even Bigfoot.
Only on blogtalkradio.com and KITCFM 106.5 and KNCPFM 107.3.
Hello, paranormal friends out there. I'm Jason Ophir, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. Pat Rice wasn't able to be with us this evening. She's still on vacation. So I am rolling solo, going to venture into the world of the paranormal. And tonight we have two very great guests. We have Edwin and Marcia Becker. And we've had Edwin on the show previously. He wrote a book called A True Haunting, which is a fantastic book. I actually had managed to read a copy of it. And I'm very anti-intellectual, and I do not read anything at all. I'm surprised I even know how to read. But I read a copy of his book, and I couldn't put it down. That's how amazing this book was, A True Haunting. And so tonight we're going to talk to Edwin and Marcia, because they have another book out, which is A True Haunting 2, which is it's the other perspective of the book by Edwin. So it's, I believe, written by Edwin, but it's Marcia's perspective on the haunting. So we're going to bring them on right now. Marcia and Edwin, how are you? I was getting tongue-tied there for a second. I think I had a mini stroke or something.
Oh, no. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. It's a good evening. I want to start by thanking you, you know, because you, I don't know if you remember years ago, you got me started with using Audacity.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Since then, I've used it, and I've done some voiceovers for some of my friends, and it's been good to me, and you taught me a lot then.
It's really fun, and for the listeners out there, Audacity is a free audio program where you can lay down several tracks, if you're music or talk, and add sound effects, and it's a lot of fun to work with. So anybody out there, it's a free program, anybody can get it if you just want to have fun and create things.
Can I get something out of the way right away and take
sure.
Just a minute? I've got a good friend in the chat room, so I want to say hello to Joe Galley. And Joe, call me sometime. We've known each other only about 40 years.
Hi, Joe.
I want to say hello to Julius Gutierrez, a recent friend who's just a wonderful person, and a writer, Mary Lou Imami. She's actually writing the book on Joseph DeLuise, the person I dedicated my original book to, and I got to write the foreword for her. So, Mary Lou, thank you for that. Of course, Eileen Hall, Oklahoma Lady, Debbie Green in Fort Smith, and Brenda Heinrich. She's my girl.
She's our very dear friend.
And that's out of the way.
You guys are very popular. I see you all over on these blog talk shows. And Marcia makes these outstanding rosaries. And that's rosariesbymarcia.com, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also have a Facebook store, so, and eBay, so if anybody's interested. If nobody minds, Ed got his turn. He's always first. I want to say hi to a couple of people.
Yeah,
to my really, really dear friend, Sandy Jones, because I know she's listening, and Sarah Tuffy, and Therese Schutte. So that's my little group there.
Well, now we've got our friend Rick Wade in the chat room. So
hi, Rick. He's a sweetie. He's very supportive. I love everybody. I'm telling you, you know, I hear a lot of people complaining, drama, and Facebook this and that. I find it to be a group of the nicest people, and I just love it. we have a lot of fun and support each other and help each other. So I think it's really what you make it. It's all
yeah,
about
there
attitude.
There is a lot of drama in the paranormal. It seems like everybody's competing against each other. And
sad.
I know I watch your guys' posts, and they're all very positive, much like mine. I'm all about fuzzy cute kitties and being positive and not hateful. And you guys are the same
exactly.
way.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even like to, you know, Marcia and I could really fill a digest with our health problems the last few years. We don't even want to post those.
No.
You want to make people feel good. And, you know, the only time I'll post a health problem is if possibly I'm going to disappear from Facebook for some days. And I don't want people to think they're being ignored.
I give little warnings because word gets around and everybody gets mad at me because I didn't say anything. So I'll give a little something and, you know. That's
but
it.
Now it's so political. I mean, people, you got people who don't like other people and you got all these issues of politics and gender and everything going on and whether the Confederate flag should be destroyed and people stomping on the American flag, and I think people are just going nuts.
Everybody gets offended by everything. It's out of control. People.
Well,
I
get offended. Okay, I was going to post a rant. You know, I'm tired. I think we should be called wise aged Americans as far as seniors. No more geezers. No more seniors. No more of that crap. Okay, we are the wise ones. That's what I want. I think would be politically correct. You know, we're the only country in the world. We've got a dictionary of words we can't say. It's amazing.
It is.
But I'm drifting off topic. Give me an opening in the line, and I will go. You get old, Jason. Someday you're going to get to be my age, and then you're going to see. You're going to be pissed off at everything. I walk around and I get angry at the checkout people, and you can't go to a takeout place without them. You know, you go to the store and I get upset at the checkout people. I get upset at the people at the fast food place. They can't do an order without leaving something off. The world is just becoming a mess. But why did I write True Haunting? What happened was I got a lot of complaints with True Haunting, and I wrote it from my perspective. I wrote it in a vacuum. And everybody wanted to know, what did Marcia do there 24/7? And I never asked her. I mean, God's honest truth, I never asked her. Because as a young man, I couldn't protect her. Therefore, I didn't want to hear it. And I was also, you know, a non-believer to begin with. And then we did Paranormal Witness, and my tenant pops out, Dan, and his story was unbelievable. I mean, what Marcia and I didn't know was amazing. We didn't know what the hell was going on the first floor. And he gave me 25 pages of occurrences and about 40 hours on the phone. And it was like, holy crap. And then there was a final story of my final tenant that when you read the book, you'll see, you know, that I'm more educated today and I knew how to view it properly. When I was a young man, this woman turned kind of south. She went south. I didn't understand what she was doing. I just thought she went crazy. But mm-hmm. I left it out of the first book. So now this book is actually Marcia's perspective. It's Dan's experience and occurrences, and it's the crazy Mrs. Scott. And there's something else in there that I kind of bared my soul with, and that was my guardian angel. Mm. Because there was a factor there where we had no money, we had no means, and a real estate man came along, and he came out with a house we could afford. He was able to get me a loan, which I shouldn't have got. A whole bunch of things happened that just shouldn't have happened. And so I weaved that into it. But it's Marcia's voice. And what I decided to do is I wrote the introduction and the foreword in my author notes. And then I let her talk. And I wrote it, of course. It's my writing, but I no censorship. Tell me the story, and tell us your story.
Tell the story.
No.
Well, it's, I'm telling you, people, this was, you know, when Ed said, I really, it was my idea a long time ago, and then Ed thought about it and decided he wanted to do it. And I thought it would be very therapeutic to do this because he said it was very therapeutic for him when he did his. But it turned out to be a lot harder to go back there than I really thought originally. It was kind of rough on both of us. And Ed mm-hmm. heard things that he never knew before, so it was hard for him to hear, hard for me to say. But, you know, this house from the very beginning was something was wrong with it. And I sensed it immediately. It just was very uncomfortable. It was a feeling of, you know, get out, go away. This is not your house. And that never left us, that feeling of it not being our house. It just stayed with us. And when I first saw that place, I kind of backed off a little. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, no, I've got to be brave. I've got to go in there because poor Ed, you know, he went through all this. And really, he did. It was really an ordeal for him. And I didn't want to be one of these wives that gave their husband, you know, a hard time just because the house wasn't perfect. I was fine with the old homes. I love old houses. And I was anxious to fix it up. And so in my mind, I'm thinking flowers and all this stuff. Well, that wasn't going to help this place at all.
No. I've walked into a place, and it's like walking into a wall. Like, is that kind of what it is when you first walk in there?
Yes, it's an invisible wall, and there is a boundary there that you sort of, you know, it's invisible, but you feel it, and you just have trouble. Your legs feel heavy, and you have trouble getting any further in. I just sort of, you know, took my neck and turned it and looked around because I really did not want to go all the way in. Now, Ed thought it was because the place was a disaster. There was stuff all over, you know, they had left garbage and it was a mess when I first saw it. And that didn't bother me because I'm not afraid of cleaning. That's fine. Painting, we'll make it pretty. That kind of thing didn't bother me. It was just something else. And on moving day, when the boys were bringing up boxes, I was one of these people that everything was labeled and neat and this goes in this room and that room. So I was sort of busy entering the living room because that's the boxes they brought in first, and they had already brought the furniture in. So I put my prized crystal candy dish, which everyone knows about, this candy dish meant a lot to me. Because it was one of our few wedding presents. We had eloped, so we didn't get any big wedding presents. And I love this crystal candy dish, and I very carefully put it in the middle of the coffee table, turn around to get out the matching pieces, and when I turned back around, it was on the edge, teetering on the edge. I said, there's no way I would have done that. I'm too careful with this. No way I would have done it. So I put it back again, thinking I'm just tired, it's moving day, you know, I'm a new mom, I'm just going to let that go. I reached back in again, pulled something else out, same thing. Turn around, it's on the edge. So I pulled out one of my grandmother's old dollies, and I put that there thinking the table was uneven or the floor, maybe it was sliding, this would keep it in place. That didn't help. Again, it was on the edge. This thing was messing with me from the beginning because they know what you care about. They know what upsets you. They know what buttons to push. And it started right from the beginning. You know, it's going to take my favorite piece and it's going to, you know, tease me with it. Look what I can do, sort of thing. So, you know, right off from the beginning, we were going through that. But, you know, you don't want to tell. I didn't want to tell Ed. I really didn't even think ghost at that time. I just thought strange. There's something weird going on here. And because I'd never experienced anything like that before. So, no, my first thought was not ghost. But weird, yes. There's something very strange going on. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, today, in retrospect, I look back and I think, oh, boy, I started it right away because the first thing I did after closing was I met a guy who lived down the alley and he owned a secondhand store. And he wanted a cement mixer that was in the backyard. It was an old hand mixer, crank mixer. And I told him, I said, you can have it for nothing if you clean out the apartment. And there was some decent furniture in there, and a lot of the upholstered furniture had been cut into and stuff. But I just had to have him clean the place out without any regard. You know, I didn't know about, let's say, attachments. So maybe there were things that they, you know, that they were fond of, and I treated it all like garbage. So in a way, I kind of think if I got to write True Haunting again, the first book, I would say I declared war on him right at that point. That was probably the first thing that instigated him.
Yeah, because you found a lot of, what was it, pornography in the basement and a lot of strange things.
Yeah.
And
yeah, the basement was a hellhole. I mean, Marcia wouldn't go down there.
No.
And I was, for some reason, I was just obsessed with cleaning that place out. So it went from a basement filled with junk and garbage, filthy, a coal room with coal oil. And I decided I'd clean the whole place out, eventually bleached it down and painted it white, and I was obsessed. But I never could get rid of the feeling. Something that Marcia, in doing this book and talking to Marcia, I mean, she brought up some things that I never noticed. They weren't in the first book, because I just didn't notice them. I'm a musical person. So I love music. I live music. Music is part of my life. But when I went in the basement, I didn't bring a radio with me. I didn't bring anything with me. I worked in dead silence. And in retrospect, I know why. I mean, because my fight or flight mechanism was always on edge. I always felt there was somebody watching me. I'd be turning quickly. I'd be looking around. And my adrenaline would be up. And maybe I even got addicted to that feeling a little bit. Because I'd go down there, and Marcia would say, why are you working down there? And I'd say, I got to clean that place up. I got to make it clean. But they work on you that way. And they worked on Marcia in one way, and they worked on me in another. I became very, very agitated and hostile at a pin drop. I mean, I would become hostile.
So is that kind of a subconscious thing?
No, I think it's a sign. I list it as one of the signs of coming in contact with a malevolent spirit. If you walk into somewhere and you get a hot flash and you feel agitated for some reason, that's a good sign that there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think your body is your best. I argue with investigators, especially those guys. If the UK, when they download this, they're going to hear me. So, hi, fellas, and Mandy and Avril. But they know that, you know, I kind of feel your body is your best instrument. And if I had to walk into a place, I'm not a ghost hunter or a thrill seeker. So if you said, Ed, will you check this building out for me to see if there's anything in there, I would simply put on a pulse oximeter on my finger. Now, I don't need the oxygen part. But my pulse, right. You know, my walking pulse, let's say it's 75, my walking pulse. If there's something in there and my body senses it, without me feeling it, my pulse is going to go up to like 90. Because it's deciding whether to trigger your fight or flight. Now, before it even triggers it and you feel it and you have the adrenaline rush, your body's going to prepare for that. And you will never feel it, but your pulse will show it.
Right.
And so, you know, let me take someone who's a professional who's not going to get adrenaline rush or get thrill seeker, put a pulse oximeter on their finger, walk into a building, let your pulse zip up 10, 15 points for no apparent reason, and your body is getting ready to trigger your fight or flight mechanism.
That would be a really interesting experiment. I would love to see if somebody could do some research on that, you know, find a place that has that energy, that negative feeling, and take 10 people and give them a pulse oximeter and see if that correlates. It wouldn't surprise me if it did, because I get that. I do believe that the human body is the best detector, because I've had those feelings. And what's interesting about it is I've had these feelings. I don't even have to walk into a place. I can just see a place. And there have been many times I'm like, you know, telling a friend, you've moved into a haunted house, not even stepping, you know, just from looking at a picture. And then sure enough, they're calling me back saying the place is haunted, all this crazy stuff is happening. So I totally get it and totally believe that.
Yeah, you sense it. And there's probably, I don't know, a dozen or so tells that people can be familiar with. And once you've experienced them, your body records them. I mean, you always remember those feelings. I mean, Marcia and I, we know. I mean, we've been called out to go through people's houses. Our friends, I don't do that routinely. I don't go ghost hunting. I won't do any of that stuff. Been there, did that. You know, and though 90% of your spirits you're going to encounter are going to be benign, that 10% I don't want to meet. So,
In your experience, obviously the haunting that you were involved in was more of a negative one, but how would somebody be able to differ the two? I mean, is it just a different feeling energy? Do you think that you can feel a different energy, something's malevolent versus not?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I don't know how to even explain it, the degree of sensitivity you have, but when Marcia and I had to move from Branson to Springfield, we found the perfect house. It was right across from Mercy Hospital here, literally right across the street, and it was built in the 30s, Art Deco, so it had the porch that went over the carport into a three-car garage, and it was really classic.
Nice.
Really,
yeah.
Classic.
It was.
But we went inside, and she went one way, I went another, and I went downstairs to the basement to see the man cave, and I walked across the middle of the basement. I got about to the middle, and boom, it hit me like a sledgehammer. Walked right into it, and I basically actually walked backwards, and I said, I'm sorry I violated your space. I meant no disrespect. God bless you, and I left. And I went up the stairs. Now, I'm about to tell Marcia, let's get the hell out of here. And she comes to me and she says, let's get the hell out of here. She felt it somewhere else.
We're out of here. We're gone to you.
Yeah, you can feel it. And not only, I know you can discern a dark force, but sometimes you can just feel a strong force, which isn't necessarily good or bad, but I don't want to make the judgment. I'm not going to stick around to make that judgment. I'm out of there, you know, once I feel it. Most of them, I mean, there are spirits you can't feel or you can barely feel. I mean, Marcia and I call them, our house is our sanctuary, so nothing bad can come through here. I mean, it's blessed from head to toe, and there's blessed items from head to toe. But we still get travelers, what we call travelers.
That sort of a transient spirit.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I'm going to put out a webisode. I'm putting out these webisodes. A cable channel asked me to do a half-hour series, but I didn't like what they proposed because they would own everything. They would own all the rights to it and everything else. And my son-in-law, brilliant son-in-law, he says, "Hey, why don't you just do webisodes and put them on your site and put them on YouTube?" So I'm doing webisodes now. And, you know, hopefully telling some stories that are real and giving my opinions on various items, like attachments and like, you know, attachments to items I kind of feel are laughable. I laugh when I hear about them because logically, Jason, if you become a spirit and attach yourself to an item, would it be an ominous item that you hated? No, it would be something you loved. And
yeah,
Marcia and I, having been in the business, I've been a collector for over 30 years, and we owned a store where thousands of items passed through our hands. We came across attachments. But typically, they're good. They're not bad. They're, the guy who gets shot or stabbed with a knife doesn't want to be near that knife. You know what I mean? It's exactly the opposite of what the BS entertainment industry feeds you.
I'm not a big believer on attachment.
Yeah, attachments
I haven't had experience with attachments. I'm kind of a skeptic with everything. So
there's nothing wrong with that.
You don't want to see my episode 4 with that I'm going to do this week. Because I'll tell you some real stories, and Marsha and I can tell you some real stories. We've seen people deteriorate in the last 4 years. I mean, just flat out. I can't mention names, but we've seen them go from, you know, being wonderful, positive, and all of a sudden everything's negative. Their relationships are suffering. Everything, they're making negative decisions. They're doing things that don't make any sense. Their health starts to suffer. And, you know, it's much like I say, you can't protect yourself. You know, I don't care what people do, what their faith is. The analogy I use is if, you know, I can go out and pray all I want and hang stuff around my neck, and but if I walk into the lion's cage and pull its tail, God's not going to help me. He's going to look down at me like, you know, what kind of idiot did I create? And that's kind of how I feel about people who go into these haunted active asylums and things. It's a paranormal zoo, it's a paranormal zoo where the animals are loose and you don't even know what the hell they are, and you're going to walk in there and you think you're protected. I don't think so, myself. And I wish I could name names because I could cite cases where there is one fellow who does admit it. He admits that he gave up investigating, he gave up everything, and
right.
He stays as far from paranormal as he can today.
Well, thankfully,
Back to Marsha.
Yeah, let's get back to Marsha. I did have a question.
I kind of knew. I kind of knew after we moved in. I really thought, you know, I wasn't as insulting as I could have been because I didn't want to hurt her feelings. But I was a non-believer for the most part. I'm a very logical person. And I belong in the show-me state of Missouri. But I thought she's going through chemical changes. You know?
Okay, nice.
No, I'm serious.
I know.
She was young. We just had a baby. I knew that, you know, I know as much about women today as I knew then, so I don't know anymore. But I knew she was going to go through these changes, and then she's locked up in a place by herself, and I thought her imagination was getting just a little bit too active. I was writing it off. And I didn't understand the frustration I created for her, but it's part of what ghosts do. They separate you and they get between your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Marsha?
No. I'm sorry. I thought he was talking. I don't like to interrupt.
Oh, you know, we're actually at the almost the halfway point. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to play a commercial. And you'll recognize it because it's in your voice, Ed. And
okay.
It's one of the comedy, the zombie comedy that you did. If you don't mind me playing that.
No.
Not at all.
Okay. Yeah, it's on my rotation here. So I'll do that, and I want to remind everybody – you're listening to Paranormal Horizons on 106.5 KITC FM, 107.3 KNCP, and Blog Talk Radio. And we'll come back in just a moment with Ed and Marsha Becker.
This is author Edwin F. Becker. My success with 1-800-RENT-A-GHOST has been such that I have a whole new enterprise. It is for those that are thinking, man, I can't wait for that zombie apocalypse. Well, I have the answer for you. Dial 1-800-OWN-A-ZOMBIE. You'll be the center of attention wherever you go. What a surprise those Jehovah's Witnesses will get when they knock on your door. Are you the black sheep of the family? Just think of the terror you can bring to that next family gathering. I'll bet you never knew fat old Uncle Ned could jump tables and run so fast. Or take your zombie to the next high school reunion. You can turn him loose on those nerdy brainiacs that made fun of you and say goodbye to their high IQs. Laid off from your executive job? Take your special friend to the boardroom to help you say farewell to your boss. You'll add a new meaning to the term budget cuts. Neighbors giving you problems making noise? Introduce them to your new pal and stand back, because all will be quiet very soon. You'll be waiting for that next a-hole to look at you and say, bite me. Because anyone who gives you the finger really does give you the finger.
Excuse me, kind sir.
Dial 1-800-OWN-A-ZOMBIE. Order now and get the free book, Sewing on Limbs Can Be Creative. Not responsible for infectious disease, death, mayhem, severed limbs, cannibalism, paranoia, loss of sanity, nor that god-awful stench. And one more thing. There will be no returns.
And we are back. So where do I get that? Where do I get that book, Severed Limbs? I want that book. It can be entertaining. All right.
That's a great. That is a great title for a book, Severed Limbs. You know.
Yeah. But so Marcia, so back to you, and I was really curious to hear more of your experiences in that house. I'm trying to remember back. It's been a long time since I read the original book. But one of the things when I read the original book was that crazy lady when you guys first went there. What was her name? Was it Myrna?
Myra.
Was it? Myra.
Yes. Oh, she was absolutely insane. And that she scared the bejesus out of me. I remember I met her, of course, the way everybody else did. She came screaming out. But the time that actually got to me the most was one morning I was sitting in my kitchen where I held up. That was my fortress there. And the baby was playing, and I was having my coffee, and it was quiet. I never locked my doors. And she came barreling in my back door, which right away I nearly fell out of my chair, and started screaming at me that I had done all this stuff in her house. And I said, Myra, I've never been in your house. You know, that you have to go now. The thing that worried me was, how crazy is she? So I wanted to put myself between the baby and her. So immediately my mom instincts kicked in. So that's what I did. But, you know, I'm only 4'11", so everybody's taller than I am. It's kind of hard to get, you know, look mean and grumpy. So I just, you know, finally got her backing her up and got her out the door, and I locked the door. And I called Ed right away, and I said, she has to go. This woman's insane. Now she's, you know, coming into our house. So Ed did go down and talk to her, but you can't talk to crazy. I mean, she didn't get it. Nothing registered with this woman, and she was scary. I mean, like her little dog, it wasn't until Ed wrote the book that we actually started talking and comparing notes. We began to wonder if this dog was even real now, because it never acknowledged us. Now, Ed and I are both huge animal people. Animals love us. This dog never even looked at us. And when she moved out, we figured there's going to be this huge mess, okay, because we never saw her take the dog out. No, there was nothing. No sign of a dog, no messes, no nothing. It was weird. So, you know, we started putting things together like a puzzle, and it had a different look to it than it did back then, because we really, you know, you don't know about ghosts. There's no Google. There's no internet. There's nobody to talk to about it. So you just sort of learn on-the-job training, you know, as we went along. We learned what we learned. But now looking back, knowing what we know, we see it a little bit differently. And certainly would have done everything differently. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, one of the threads that I saw clearly writing the second book that I didn't have in the first book was, you know, we move in, we know Myra's batshit crazy, all right? I never knew the torment that our first tenants went through. So Danny's wife experienced stuff that we don't even know. I mean, it ruined his marriage and everything else. So that was the second woman in that apartment. Then came my sister, and my sister had a bad, dark experience that lasted her a lifetime, and she had a sad death. And then a story that I left off of my original book, because I couldn't make heads or tails out of it, until I saw the thread that went through all the women that lived on the first floor. And that was my last tenant, Mrs. Scott. And I when you read the story in True Haunting 2, you'll understand why I left it off True Haunting 1, but how it's appropriate now, because it affected, here's a school marm, a type of woman that works in a bank, and all of a sudden she went nuts. And so it was like every woman on the first floor and everybody who was gifted, whether they were a psychic or an exorcist, they all felt that there was this huge, strong, dark presence on the first floor, and that possibly went from the basement to the first floor and occupied. I truly believe that ghosts are territorial, only because Marcia and I have solved people's problems. People will write us and they'll say, this thing doesn't work. One of them was a TV. The fellow told me it's the craziest thing. He said, I got new batteries in my remote, and the TV will, I can work my TV, and all of a sudden, bam, my remote doesn't work. Mm. And, 2 hours later, I go back, and the remote works fine. And he said he feels like there's something about it, something paranormal. Now, that sounds kind of silly, But I told him, I said, ghosts are very territorial. I said, just try moving the TV to the other side of the room. I said, can you do that? You just switch the furniture and just move it over. Did that, he never had another problem. Well, I told him, I said, you may have had that TV where whatever the spirit is sat in their rocker. And they didn't like that. And that's how ghosts are. And Marcia and I Marcia will explain it to you, but we knew that there was a female spirit in the kitchen because it did female things. So it turned water, it opened cabinets, it messed with dishes and pots and pans and the broom. But we also knew if we crossed the threshold into the living room, we were dealing with something else. That's something that terrorized our animals. It pulled a plug on my bathtub, it touched Marcia, threw the cat out the window. And yet, if I went to the basement, I knew I had something holy cow different down there. It was darker and a lot stronger. So they were all kind of territorial, and never did the basement entity, did I recognize it coming anywhere upstairs. So it gives me this theory. It gives me this theory that, our house blessing was a blessing.
Yes.
Because in that, he blessed the baby's room.
Yes, definitely.
And that was a safe room. It was a room where Marcia, when I was interviewing her for this book, we talked about the nights where we'd go into the baby's room, and while the baby slept, we'd sit on the floor against the wall. It was just peaceful and quiet.
Right.
And, we'd say, yeah, let's watch the baby sleep. Really, it was, let's sit here and get some peace and quiet and not have to feel like we're walking on eggshells,
Right.
Feel the energy difference in that one particular spot, like we were talking about earlier. So it was kind of a safe zone within the house?
Yeah, and it leads me to tell people that, if you live in an occupied place and it's totally occupied, don't get the whole place blessed.
Right.
Okay, leave these things an outlet. Because if you get the whole place blessed and it doesn't work right and the person doesn't do it or they won't leave, because ghosts don't leave. Regardless of what people say, they don't leave unless they want to. Or the castles in England would be empty and the Queen Mary would be empty. They're not, okay? You can't get rid of them unless you solve their problem. Well, if you give them a hostile environment, they're going to react. And I told Marcia, now 40 years later, I look back and I say, one thing we did, it was wrong, but it was kind of right, was the baby had a safe room, and we didn't bless the whole place. So we didn't create a hostile environment these things still had places where they felt they could go, and not come up against something that offended them. So, you know, I always advise people, the first thing you want to do is get your bedroom blessed and protect the hell out of your bedroom, because that's where you sleep, that's where your subconscious is vulnerable. You're totally vulnerable there. You know, protect that one room for sure. And,
does it have to be like a Christian blessing, or can anybody go around? Or a lot of people like to use sage and smudge places. Is there any like standardization, anything that works better than anything else, or is it all effective?
In your opinion? Honestly, I don't know anybody who does know, and I don't know. I don't believe in some of the modern stuff. I think that, you know, especially when it comes to demons, I think demons think sage is potpourri.
Exactly, exactly. And that, it's actually not only potpourri, but it's almost, they love it. It draws them. So it's dangerous, people, very dangerous. Don't be doing that stuff.
Yeah, demons are not
sage.
No, and a lot of other stuff. It's like,
I protect myself and feel I'm a Christian, so therefore I protect myself in the way of a Christian belief. But I don't believe God is denominational. He's non-denominational.
Right.
And so is St. Michael. And whatever a person refers to as God, I think is what they should follow. And I'm not one to say this will work. I haven't tried it all, honestly. So I just know this is working for me, and I'm happy. And, you know, I hope whatever they do works for them.
Mm-hmm.
But you are in a war, you know, when you step into that dimension.
Yeah.
I mean, I bark at some of the investigators. Because,
he does.
No, I do. You know,
he does, and rightfully so.
And I love the guys. I love them because, you know, but they think it's like a carny ride where they're going to go in, they're going to get what they want, yell at these things, and run out. And
like TV,
you know, most times they can leave unscathed, but
there's a few times
because not all spirits are malevolent,
right?
But if you hit the wrong one, then it's going to ruin your freaking life. I mean, it will ruin your life. It'll take your health, your energy. It'll ruin your relationships. I've seen people's, you know, attitudes go totally negative, where everything's a negative all of a sudden. And you see them change, and they don't even see it coming. Mm-hmm. They don't realize that it's the same world that they were in 3 months ago, but now they're totally unhappy with everything in it.
Isn't that almost like demonic oppression when you start
Yeah, and in fact, that's kind of a modern thing that the exorcists talk about, but I believe they're true. It is an oppression, and a depression and oppression. And although I don't believe, you know, everything, I believe this world is, oh, man, it's really evil. But I don't believe it's all demonic related, you know, because I think as human beings, if I had one of my girls and they were 6, 7 years old, 5 years old, and I put a bowl of chocolates out there, they'd eat it until their stomach exploded.
Oh, yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
Well, that's not demonic, you know. That's our nature, is to, you know, we want pleasure. We're pleasure seekers, the humans are. And mm-hmm. and sometimes, yeah, those pleasures are evil. So I don't think, a lot of times people point things out and they'll say, well, that's demonic activity.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. It's just certainly a demon doesn't have to push us too far in this society.
No, no, not at all. It's everywhere. Evil's everywhere. And what's going on? I mean, it's, you know, people don't understand.
Look what people, yeah. I mean, look at humanity. Look at all the violence.
Exactly.
Negativity. I'm a skeptic. I obviously evil exists, and you have to have the duality of good and evil. But we're living in a world that is completely out of control. And I don't see a real positive future for humanity at you know, the direction we're going.
Oh, I don't either. I especially for the United States.
I mean,
I hate to get off topic, but, you know, people, the media has brainwashed everybody so much that, I mean, all this racial tension is really media created. You know, if anybody ever got on the television and told it like it is, that you people are marching in honor of a criminal, are you all freaking crazy? You know, this guy's a criminal.
I'm with you on that.
You know, the first thing you do is I would go to all the schools and teach the children what it means to comply.
Right.
You know, when authority says, because every one of those incidents, if the person had complied with what the officer was saying, they never would have happened. None of them.
Yeah.
But no, they can't, you know. And then, you know, to just sit there, you know, we had 1.25 million policemen in the field today protecting us. And if one of them goes bad and makes a wrong decision, we're going to condemn these people? You know, are we nuts? That's insane. You know, because what I would have did is took all those people and I would have recorded who they are and I would have said, you're now exempt from ever calling 911. You know, you're out. You can't call 911. Not for anything, you know. But in Ferguson, we actually have private militia protecting the police. Because the police their hands are tied.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah, our
totally
world is
scary.
Just...
Maybe it's not that off topic. I mean, if humans are influenced by these negative forces, maybe that explains a lot of this criminality. I mean, it's off topic in the sense of a true haunting, but maybe on a mass scale, we are being influenced by a huge amount of evil spirits. I don't know.
You know, we've got a world expert in your chat room, Archbishop Ron Fail.
Oh,
and
awesome.
Is he in there?
Yeah,
Archbishop.
He could talk about that. It's a tough fine line. Because as humans, we are people who like to live in excess. That's not necessarily evil. That's our nature. You know, that extra piece of pizza is going to taste really good. That extra beer ain't going to hurt me. You give a kid a bowl of chocolate, and they'll eat till their stomach bursts.
Yeah.
That's just us as humans. And
right.
If we can't exercise restraint, it doesn't mean we're possessed by demons. It just means that we can't exercise restraint. We're not disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if Archbishop would agree or not, but probably at least 75% of the calls he gets are there's no demonic activity. It's just either bad behavior or the person needs psychological help.
There's plenty
a lot
of people
of that
need psychological help, that's for sure.
Yeah, people have told me that.
Everybody's got issues.
And they're not wrong. No.
Yeah. Everybody's messed up. The problem is, and this is off topic, but whatever. We've become so dependent on stuff.
We have. Well, I'll tell you something. This is true, Jason. You'll love this. I haven't drank tap water since 1977. Okay? And I truly believe it's in our water systems, and now they're spraying us with it. Because when I see what's happening today, let's say Obama, okay, on a Saturday morning, he gets up, he has breakfast, he signs an executive order that he can take our bank accounts. This is true.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is.
Nobody gives a crap. Everybody I've talked to.
I do.
I'm the only one.
I do.
I was kicking the door. I'm throwing things. And everybody I talk to, it's like, so what? Well, I'm a 60s child. And if Lyndon Johnson or John F. Kennedy or Nixon would have signed an executive order to take our bank accounts, they might as well have got on a plane and got the hell out of town because all hell would have broke loose. I mean, colleges,
I don't have much money,
young people.
So we can take mine.
I'm sorry?
I don't have much money, so, you know, it's not going to affect me too much if the government takes my bank account.
It's the principle.
It's the principle.
Yeah.
You know, well, he signed one that says he can relocate you at his will. You know, they couldn't have did that in 1964. The population would have went berserk, literally. But today, everybody's so apathetic and complacent and docile. It's like, I look around, it's like, what the hell is going on? But, you know, let someone say that the iPhone 56 is going to be late, and everybody's up in arms. You know, they got to have that iPhone 56 or whatever the hell it is. Obama could have my bank account. I just want my iPhone. It's like,
oh my God.
I'm not drinking tap water. You know, I don't drink tap water. And my kids make fun of me, my grandkids. I got 10 cases of water in the garage, at least 10, maybe 12. I won't drink tap water, and I think it's affecting people, and people just aren't right anymore.
Because the sodium fluoride or whatever they put in the water, the fluoridation to protect your teeth, that's like really used for mind control.
Well, what happened, and I'm going to go way off topic, and I'm sorry, Mark.
Okay.
But what happened with me was it was 1977, and we had bought this waterfront house in Illinois on the Fox River, and the guy that came out to check the septic system turned out to be an old man named John Raber. And afterward, it was a hot day, and I said, can I buy you lunch? And we went and had lunch, and I found out he was the one that wrote the standards for water testing for practically all of northern Illinois, and some of the people from other states had borrowed them. He'd wrote those standards. So we got into a discussion about what they test for. And they practically tested for nothing. They're testing for certain types of widespread bacteria. That was it, okay? Well, I was working in the healthcare-related field for a manufacturer, and I visited hospitals. I knew that hospitals had, the big hospitals, had one, sometimes two employees whose full-time job was flushing barrels of outdated drugs and used drugs down the toilet.
Yep.
All right.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean that
right to the water system.
That went right
there
into
goes.
That went right into the 90s. It was in the 90s
yes.
before they ever addressed it. And but they were flushing barrels. Well, you know, growing up in Chicago, I knew the water runoffs from factories into Lake Michigan. I mean, there was a famous situation where our original mayor Daley went out to fishing, and they had the best poles and everything, and went out there, and they couldn't catch a fish. But yet our shores were littered with dead fish from the pollution. And so I knew that the major source of water for the suburbs in Chicago was Lake Michigan. And then I talked to this guy. No, they don't test for, they test for arsenic. They don't test for any of these other chemicals. And I said, that's it. And my family, as long as my girls lived in my house, they never drank tap water. I had a water cooler brought in because this was before bottled water. And maybe Perrier existed in 1977, I'm not sure. But bottled water wasn't popular. And so I had a water cooler brought in, and we drank. I had filters put on our lines. And I stay away from tap water. I think it's just poison.
I just drank a glass of water, and now you're making me paranoid. We don't fluoridate water.
Well, see,
up here.
You know, I saw a little bit of that attitude when you said, I don't have any money, I don't care about the bank account. It's like, he's affected. Just the thought,
see?
if you don't have any money, just the thought that someone can say they can take your bank account from the government would just make me go berserk.
I'm a drone.
But back to evil.
Back to evil.
When I talked to Marcia, it was very, in writing this book, it was very enlightening because we had one of our nephews passed away earlier this year. And at the time I was writing the book, and Marcia became particularly sad. And I didn't understand it because I said, these were the two boys, my sister's boys, that were at Campbell Street. And after Campbell Street, we never actually saw them again. We only saw one of them. Occasionally, the other one we never saw again. His father took him, and that was the end of it. But Marcia, when he died of a sudden heart attack.
Yeah.
At 47, and Marcia was particularly sad. And I said, "Why? We didn't know him that well." And she said, "No." She said, "I taught him how to read."
Yeah.
And how to count. And I said, you did? And she said, yeah, your sister used to drop them off in the morning. She told me this whole story that I knew nothing about because I was working. And as it was, Marcia was the babysitter and surrogate mom to these boys. So when one of them passed away, she felt, you know, she saw my sister deteriorate. I didn't. I saw my sister go through chunks where all of a sudden she was drastically different to me. But Marcia saw the oppression and the possession where all of a sudden my sister, her hygiene started to suffer. All of a sudden she didn't want to put makeup on. Now she's not making lunch for her, making breakfast for her husband or lunch for his lunch pail. She's sleeping until noon.
Right.
Now she, all of a sudden the kids' clothes aren't being washed. And Marcia saw it. What she described to me when I interviewed her was this gradual deterioration that I was never aware of.
Now, wasn't your sister the one that was playing with the Ouija board on the first floor?
Oh, yeah.
Or was that,
yeah.
So that pretty much probably opened the door to that?
I believe so, because she, yeah, no, she drastically, a lot of people ask me what was her personality prior. She was very gregarious and strong and outspoken and happy. I mean, she loved to laugh. And in the end, I mean, she alienated her. I can't talk about the things that she did. She alienated her children and her family. And she wound up on a slab in Cook County, unidentified in the end.
Wow.
And fortunately, what they do is, I was very surprised by it, but I guess by her fingerprints, they were able to finally find a family member, and she didn't get buried as a Jane Doe. She did. We were able to provide her with a proper burial.
Mm-hmm.
But it ruined her life. I mean, she spent the last decade or more of her life in a little room with the radio on and the lights on 24/7, you know, talking to herself and talking to things that we couldn't see. And she wouldn't see her children. She'd... if they tried to attempt to see her, she'd say, "Go away, demon." She'd yell through the door. And she was diagnosed with just about every medical ailment. And you
oh,
imagine.
God.
They said she's schizophrenic, she's epileptic, she's bipolar. But she was never the same, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Marcia can tell you what she saw.
Oh, she went from this very energetic person. I mean, she was a great housekeeper. She was a good mom. She was, and she went to, you know, she didn't care about the house. She didn't care about her appearance. She didn't care about the kids. She didn't, I don't think she even realized what time of day it was. You know, I mean, for breakfast, there'd be hot dogs on the table. It was, she just went into a whole different world. She changed. Drastically. She would leave the house every day, leave the kids with me, you know, and we didn't know where she went. She would come back. There'd be yelling, screaming, arguing. But you know what? The yelling, screaming, arguing was the same that we heard from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a replay. They were trying to reenact, you know, what was going on before. They just wanted to cause that kind of anger and that kind of hate. And it was just, you know, continuous. I just kept the kids with me as much as I could. Try to keep them away from that. And it was frightening. I mean, she had her friends over. They would play the Ouija board. There'd be candles. Excuse me, allergies today. There'd be candles. It was, you know, I would go down there and I would beg her to stop, because the last thing we needed was to bring more things in. So it was very, very, very frightening for all of us.
It's very frightening to know that these entities can have such a drastic effect on people. But we're actually, unfortunately, the show's only an hour, and we need more time for this. You know, would you guys be willing to come back and do kind of a part two
oh,
in
yes.
the near future?
Oh,
awesome.
Absolutely.
And what I didn't announce is we're going to do a book giveaway. And what I'm going to do is I have a random number generator, and I'm going to input how many people there are in chat, and I'm going to let this little program pick the number. But it's going to take a little bit of my brain power to do this. So while I'm figuring this out, can you guys talk about where people can get a True Haunting 1 and a True Haunting 2 and rosaries and all that? Kind of let people know how to get a hold of you and get the books. And while you're doing that, I'll figure this out. How's that?
Okay.
All right.
Well, Marcia makes wonderful rosaries. And they're not just rosaries, they're heirloom quality rosaries. So they're made with sometimes precious stones or holy stones, stones considered holy. And she'll make them with silver or with whatever, and she has a website, www.rosariesbymarcia.com. And she also sells them on eBay as seller Old Time, OLDTIME, 48. And, of course, she has a Facebook store also. And our Facebook friends get the best deals. I have to tell you that. You know, she's kind of prejudiced toward that. As far as my books, it's Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. Or there are a few select mortar stores that are carrying them now. And look for True Haunting or True Haunting 2, and I've got about 7 other books that you can peruse or like, and they're all written with I always have a social commentary subtext underneath my story, but the stories are all original. Or you can come to www.edwinbecker.com. Now, www.edwinbecker.com, you'll not only get my books, but you can tap into a copy of Paranormal Witness and watch the episode. It was actually a record-setting season 2 finale, our episode, The Tenants. Or you can tap into the YouTube footage of the original news footage of The Exorcism, which is on YouTube. Or you can watch one of my webisodes. And if you've got a problem, there's also a link that takes you to the Order of Exorcists. Because Marcia and I can give you light information and light advice. But if it gets too heavy or too dark, we, of course, refer you to an expert. And we have an expert in the chat room, in fact. And TrueHaunting.com also has its own website. So it's www.TrueHaunting.com. And there's more information. And I think it actually has some photos of us doing the filming and how the books were written and why they were written. It'll give you everything about us. And awesome. I'm hoping, Jason, I'm hoping you do invite us back because we enjoyed this. It went too fast.
Yeah, we you know, and I wouldn't mind talking more about the government and stuff like that because that also intrigues me. It's not really paranormal, but I'm really big into conspiracy, and it's a topic that I really enjoy. But we okay, so I put how many people there were in chat in a random number generator. This isn't fake. This is totally legit. So the number that came out was 2, and so that, according to my little chat thing, would be Archbishop Ron Fail. But he may already have a book, so I don't know.
No, he doesn't. I have not sent him.
Not yet.
I haven't sent him True Haunting or
That's
True
right.
Haunting 2. He did read my book, Banished, and gave me a thumbs up on it. But I didn't send him True Haunting or True Haunting 2, so...
He's eligible.
He's eligible, and I think we have his address already. Do we, Marcia?
Yes, I do.
Well,
so, Archbishop, we're going to send you something.
Awesome.
You're going to get a package in the mail.
Well,
we do love him.
He's a great friend of the show. He's been on a guest a couple times, and the work he does out there helping people that have these demonic problems is really
outstanding.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wish we had more time because I could tell you a true story where he helped one of my fans who's not a paranormal person. She came at me with a paranormal problem, and I referred her to their organization, and they took care of the whole darn thing, and it was amazing.
Just with kindness and caring. And it was
And, you know,
amazing.
He sits on the West Coast, and my fan was on the East Coast. and he dispatched someone out there and handled the problem. I mean, he's nationwide, and I don't know of anybody else. I do know other people who I trust that would do these things, but typically they're localized.
Mm-hmm.
His arms reach out to Europe, so he's a very, very, very powerful man when it comes to addressing evil.
Absolutely. Well, alrighty. Well, I think we're out of time, and I will get in contact with you too, so we can have you both on. It was fun. I truly enjoyed talking to you guys.
We had fun, and it was good to talk to you. And I'll be happy to come back
anytime. Just let us know.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah, even if you want to talk about the water.
I actually do want to talk about the water. Maybe we can do like a paranormal / show of water conspiracy or something.
I'll add
maybe
above that.
Well, now I thought your show was 2 hours, and you know, because I take my medication at regular times. Actually, this is fine for me now.
Right.
Good. See, it worked out. No, I felt that when we started doing the show that 2 hours, it's just, it's hard to keep somebody's attention for 2 hours. So we do these hour
it
shows.
It is.
So. Right. All right. Well, I'm going to end it here. I'll be in touch with you guys to get you back on. And congratulations to Archbishop Ron Fail for winning whatever book he gets. And I'm going to close the show. And thank you guys for coming on.
Well, thanks to the listeners, and thank you, Jason, and God bless you all.
God bless you, too.
Good night.
We'll talk to you next time. Good night. All right, we're going to end the show. I just want to remind everybody you're listening to Paranormal Horizons on 106.5 KITC FM and 107.3 KNCP and Blog Talk Radio. So we don't have anything on the schedule coming up. Myself, I'm kind of in a transitional period with work, and I don't know what my schedule is, so... it's going to be kind of hit and miss and spontaneous to have the shows coming out in the future. But we are not going to give up regardless of what happens with our work. We're going to continue doing the show. And so stay tuned for the invites for the next show. And I want to thank everybody that was in chat and came. And I hope everybody has a great and safe week. Good night, everyone. You have been listening to Paranormal Horizons, only on 106.5 KITC FM and 107.3 KNCP FM and Blog Talk Radio. Join Jason Ophir and Pat Rice next Tuesday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, as we explore the world of the paranormal, and always be sure to visit us on Facebook at Paranormal Horizons on Facebook.